Lights. Camera. Action. It's the KSL Movie Show.
The end is inevitable. Your kind is headed for extinction.
Maybe so, sir. But not today.
The week's big movie review, movie news, games, and prizes. Here's Andy Farnsworth and Steve Sales.
Right now, we are being so unoffensive, we might as well be a Hallmark Christmas movie. You know what I'm saying?
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
The snow's falling outside, and the movie show gets into its second December Friday. Steve Sales, Andy Farnsworth, we're broadcasting live from Minky Couture in Layton, and we are going to have some amazing deals
to tell
you about.
What a day for a blanket, huh?
Right? I'm actually thinking it's how cold it is outside. It'd be nice to wrap up in a nice, soft blanket. But here on the movie show, we just want to get you right to the good stuff, the stuff you want. So, Steve...
Yeah.
Let's just jump right in and do our big movie review right now. No waiting, right now.
Wow.
And the big movie of the week is sponsored by Paris RV. We actually have a sounder for the big movie, don't we?
I think so.
But not the actual clip, but like a sounder. Don't we?
We did.
All right. Well,
and
there's
now,
a bunch of...
The big movie review. Andy and Steve
delay.
Have everything your family needs to know about the biggest release of the week.
And our big movie of the week is sponsored by Paris RV. They've got incredible deals on 2023 models to make room for the new 2024s. Go to ParisRV.com to see their selection. The big movie of the week, Steve, is The Boy and the Heron.
A lot of strange things happen in this place.
I just hope he stays safe.
Save me.
Save me, my dog.
What exactly are you?
Dear mother, she's awaiting your rescue. I'll be your guide.
That was the voice of Mark Hamill. Yes, if you're familiar with his voice work besides Luke Skywalker, he's actually a pretty prolific voice actor. And he's he's the voice of the Heron, I believe. Am I wrong? I didn't get to see the English version. So
might be the wizardy guy.
I thought he was the Heron, but you could be right. So at any rate, it's called The Boy and His Heron. No, not his. The Boy and the Heron,
yeah.
Because it's not his heron. And it is a Japanese animated movie from Studio Ghibli and directed by Hayao Miyazaki.
Correct.
Who did Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away, some of the more beautiful animated movies of all time.
There's a million of them.
And this one is supposedly his final film.
Yeah.
Now... It's originally a Japanese movie, and you and I saw two different versions of it because we didn't go the same day. I saw the actual Japanese dub, or the Japanese with English subtitles. You got to see the English language version that had what an amazing all-star cast.
Oh, yeah, the list is Christian Bale, Willem Dafoe, Mark Hamill, as we mentioned, Dan Stevens, Dave Bautista.
Oh, yeah.
Plays the Parakeet King. We got Robert Pattinson, Florence Pugh. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So it's a beautifully animated, colorful film about a boy named Mahito who tragically loses his mother in a hospital fire. And then he struggles to fit in his new home when his father gets remarried. And then when his pregnant stepmother disappears, he follows after her into this strange tower near their home that takes him to this mystical and magical land. And that's basically it. After that, I mean, you're going to want to experience the story. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but you said you went last night, and it was a pretty packed showing.
That was the most people I've ever seen in a theater on a Thursday at 5 o'clock.
Wow.
I mean, there was only like two or three seats in the upper section. The lower section was even filling up. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was lucky to get in.
No, so tell me your thoughts.
Well, Spirited Away is one of my favorite movies, especially of that year. That was 20 years ago almost, maybe a little over 20 years ago. I remember the Utah Film Critics Association, we picked it as the best animated and best foreign film. I mean, that's how amazing it was. And we even, I think we've even picked the director as the best director. I mean, it was one of those powerful years. So anticipating that a little bit, I thought this was really good. And believe me, I mean... The work that goes into making these movies are unbelievable. But I didn't think it was as good as Spirited Away. I thought it was good. I liked it. I enjoyed it. But I was, you know, man, I just didn't feel like that overwhelming. I still gave it a B+, but it, you know, I don't think it was his best work, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it's hard to top the, some of the titles that you mentioned that are considered by some to be like their favorite animated movies of all time.
Right.
I mean, once you've set a bar that's so high, it's hard to continue to clear that.
Right.
For me, I actually, this is the first Miyazaki that I've ever seen. I haven't seen some of the others. They're on my list. My Neighbor Totoro, I actually have in my collection to watch because I've heard good things about that.
Spirited Away should be on your list.
And Spirited Away, I've never heard a bad thing about that movie. But for me, I really liked... For me, the challenge, and I don't... This is why I wanted to get your thoughts on it first. One, because you'd seen other Miyazaki films. And the other, because you got to just immerse yourself in the animation while the story came to you.
Right.
And for me, watching it, and this is blasphemy, obviously, to the big fans, I would have preferred to have seen it in English only because I had to spend so much time reading that I lost out on what the emotional performance from the voices could be. I mean, when they were upset, it was obvious, but, you know, listening, just rewatching the trailer in English after I had seen the full thing in Japanese, I was like, you know, I would have felt differently in that scene if I had heard that performance.
Right.
Because I'm reading it, and then I'm having to guess what the emotion is. It's like reading the script while you watch the movie silently. It's probably, or muting the sound and putting on subtitles. You're not going to get the same exact effect as you would. And so I feel like I missed some of the beauty of the animation because I kept having to divert my eyes away from it.
Well, that's the key right there. Is the beauty of the animation is what makes this movie so spectacular. The look of it is just staggering, and the things that he does, and layering, and, you know, stuff in water, just, it's crazy cool.
There's a scene in the trailer where a person is laying on a couch, and when they get touched, they melt.
Yeah.
And that I did see, because there wasn't any dialogue when that happened. That looked really amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been working on this movie since 2016. I mean...
Six years.
Yeah. So he can only do so much. He used to do maybe, I don't know.
So does he do the animation on it then?
No, that was the question. He directs the animators, and he's got like 60 people that are doing the animation. So it's a big old shop, and he's working the room, I guess. I'm not sure how he physically does it, but, you know, he can only do like a minute a month kind of thing. It's crazy.
And if you're used to nothing but computer animation, and, you know, as beautiful and as good as computer animation can be, especially if you're an older movie watcher, there's nothing quite like watching something that's been painted and drawn.
Yeah.
And how it moves, and when they move the camera angles, it's different when you know a computer is able to render a 3D model and move everything around.
Right.
But when you have to draw that full scope, the more epic a scene looks hand animated, the cooler it is to kind of consider, wow, there was a lot of work put into this.
Yeah, and considering that Miyazaki is considered the Walt Disney of Japan, I mean, that's how revered he is throughout the world. And so it completely explains why the theater was packed last night. I was actually kind of surprised. I didn't know there were that many anime fans, you know, in Utah.
It is a very big growing fandom here in Utah, especially. My daughter's one of them. She's way big into anime. But I would say when you go see The Boy and the Heron, which I gave it 2.5, I couldn't go higher just because maybe if I see the English, I could give it higher. And I actually would like to see it again to kind of get more of the story
it
should help.
And it's a very personalized story because this is kind of almost autobiographical for him. So there's a lot of personal stories within this thing. It does take a few viewings in order to get all of the material that he's trying to present. But, yeah,
Would you put it on your best animated movie of the year list? That's where I can't quite get to that yet. Maybe when I see it in English I can, but that's not where I am
with
it.
Maybe top 10, but there were so many good animated movies this year. I would say maybe top 5, but there are a few others that I would prefer.
Okay. So The Boy and the Heron, a 2.5 star for me.
A B plus.
And I think I'm going to adopt the letter grading system next year with the new movie show so people don't have to kind of guess what the differences are.
Well, that's always difficult. That was my problem. Are you a 5-star or are you a 4-star?
No, that's a good point. Mine's 2.5 out of 4. So, we'll standardize it. We'll get to that point. But that is The Boy and the Heron, and that is our big movie of the week sponsored by Paris RV. We've got other great things to talk about this week, including a new movie about a character from the Book of Mormon. Woman called The Oath. We've got an Anne Hathaway movie called Eileen. We've got a Maestro, which I didn't get to see yet, but Steve, you've been really talking well about it.
Yeah, and it's very limited. It's only at the Broadway and at the Jordan Commons, as far as I know. But this is the sort of the theater release
before
the November or the December 20th release.
Netflix. Okay, and then we have a Netflix movie with Julia Roberts and Ethan Hawke called Leave the World Behind. All of that, plus Telephone Torture and the Movie Show Top 10 coming up on today's movie show.
The Movie Show.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, Santa's coming to town.
Santa here? I know him.
On KSL News Radio.
Festive Christmas drop as we rejoin the Movie Show live from Minky Couture in Layton.
Sorry, I'm getting hugs right now.
That's all right. Steve, our text question of the day, sponsored by Call Climate Services. What is your favorite animated Christmas movie or special? And people are passionate about this as well as the texts come pouring in. We'll read off some of those soon. But before we hit bottom of the hour, I would like to talk about Leave the World Behind. Let's give a review for Leave the World Behind on Netflix.
We're so sorry to bother you. And this is our house.
This is your house?
We were driving back to the city. Then something happened.
You want to stay here, but we're staying here.
We are seeing ongoing cyber attacks across the country.
Something is happening, and I don't trust them.
Get in the car right now!
So, what we have here is Julia Roberts and Ethan Hawke decide to impulsively rent an Airbnb-type vacation home.
Just on a whim.
They're going to take their preteen daughter and teenage son and just go away for the weekend. Don't think about it, because the more you think about it, the more you'll come up with reasons not to. They go. They're having a good time. It's just outside New York.
What a house. A
gorgeous house. I mean, this is what you think of when they do the ads for renting a vacation home. Except for then all of a sudden they get a knock in the middle of the night. And Mahershala Ali and a woman he claims is his daughter is there saying, hey, this is our house and there's a blackout in the city and we decided to come and stay at the house. Well, all of a sudden, red flags start going up for Mama Julia Roberts. Papa Ethan is a little less worried.
Yeah, he's like, hey, he's like,
honestly, I related very much to Ethan Hawke's character there, because I feel like I would be the same way. But this is a movie where I don't want to tell you about the movie any more than that, because it's way better enjoyed, in my opinion, without knowing any more than this mysterious people show up at the door in the middle of the night and say, this is our house and we want to stay here.
And things are happening around the area.
The phones suddenly don't work, but because they're kind of in the middle of nowhere and it's miles to the nearest neighbor, at least a couple miles to the nearest neighbor, is it the phones were cut? The question is, something nefarious appears to be going on, but the doubt is what is the nefarious thing and who's responsible? And again, I don't want to say any more than that, but I did like the tension. I haven't felt this tense watching a movie in a long time, and it has helped by not knowing the story before I watched it.
Well, and the beauty of the way it's done is that you find out along with them. You know,
yes.
You don't get any further knowledge in advance of what they're experiencing, so you're along for the ride just like they are.
I would honestly say don't watch the trailer.
Really?
I would say that, because in the trailer some really cool stuff happens, but it was more fun to be like, oh my gosh, this is happening now, as opposed to knowing in your brain that that's got to happen at some point.
The only weirdness in that movie with the deer. I still don't quite understand
what is going on with that. So we can give that away just by saying, hey, we don't know what it means.
There are deer.
There are some deer.
Staring at people.
They do some weird things. But for me, this was a solid 3-star type movie. It is rated R for some language, and I want to say maybe a little bit of violence, but it's mostly language, and there's a couple of weird teenage-related things. But at any rate.
I'm going to be as well. I thought that's kind of a fun movie for, you know, Netflix. And Ethan Hawke and Julia Roberts and Mahershala Ali is so good.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a great act. And Kevin Bacon makes an appearance as well. So
basically playing his Tremors character.
It does feel like that a lot. It's true. So that is Leave the World Behind on Netflix. For me, it was 3 out of 4 stars. Did you give it a grade?
I gave it a B.
And you gave it a B. All right, coming up on the movie show, we are going to have an interview with the writer, director, and lead actor from the new movie, The Oath.
The Movie Show.
My first save, there was this little sick kid.
What did they call him?
It was Tiny Tim.
No.
Sweet kid, one crutch.
No.
Little Larry.
No, Tiny Tim.
Micro Mike, super small Steve.
On KSL News Radio.
I did not pick that clip because it ends with super small Steve right
That's before
okay. we come back to...
No, I get it.
Steve Sales. And see, I was going to say not super small Steve, but then that comes out completely wrong. So we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we should.
But Steve, we're really excited right now to be joined on the movie show by Darren Scott, who is the director, the co-writer. Is that right, Darren? You were the co-writer along with your wife?
Yeah. My wife, Michelle, co-wrote with
and
me.
Lead actor of The Oath. And Darren, thank you so much for joining the movie show.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. Fantastic. Thank you.
So first of all, congratulations. Your movie, The Oath, hits wide release today. You excited? You nervous?
Yeah, I think there's always a little bit, there's always a little bit of that, of both. I'm thrilled to be at this part. It's a 13-year journey, as you probably know. It's been a long time coming, and just happy to finally be here. And, you know, audience reactions right now, you can go to oathmovie.com and check out our trailer. I say don't do any favors for me. Go check out the trailer. If it excites you, grab tickets. But the audience reviews are coming in, and the reactions are very, very consistent. People are very moved, very touched. It's kind of a deep, emotional, thought-provoking movie. A little bit of light humor every now and then throughout, believe it or not. But, all the feels are there. And,
I'm curious, where you shot this thing? Because some of those cliff scenes with the waterfalls were pretty cool.
Yeah, aren't they beautiful? Our director of photography, Brian O'Carroll, she's got a fantastic eye. And, of course, New York is a beautiful, beautiful place, especially that time of year, upstate New York. The park that we end up shooting at, we got exclusive access there, which has never been done before there. And what a tremendous blessing it was, because it's just breathtaking. It's absolutely breathtaking. Yeah.
Now, Darren, what made you want to tell this particular story?
Well, I've always been fascinated with heroic figures from the past, that especially from the source material, that were able to maintain their honor in viciously dishonorable times. That's always been very fascinating to me, because I feel like that's what we need today. We need to know how to, face, hard things, hard challenges, and even evil. You know, we need to be able to face that and stand up and be able to stand strong. And so it's always fascinated me. So it's always inspired me, these characters from the Book of Mormon that were so heroic and honorable. And that's what inspired me about it.
I would say one of the things I liked about it was the way that you set the scene for the movie. And, you come in on a very wide reaching, instead of coming in very focused as if you're talking to people who already know all the story, which sometimes to me is a drawback when you've got to know too much going into the movie in order to understand what's going on in the movie. But I really liked this opening, and I don't know what to call it, like a montage or the opening narration that sort of sets the scene. There were two brothers, and they disagreed over who was going to be the lead, and then their descendants fought each other for hundreds of years. And I thought that was a really solid, simple way to get into where things are set up, which, is about 1,000 years after those two brothers. And so I liked the way that set what the story you were going to tell in the movie. Was that the part? Did you write that part?
Yeah. So in the co-write process, I would write, my wife would kind of more or less edit and give me suggestions. The love story was her idea, of course, coming from a woman. I love stories too, but, she really informed that, because I think, the ladies kind of get that pretty good. You can't just jump into the end of the book without explaining, and to some degree, and to boot, to do it in, one basically image, to tell it in basically a paragraph. It's very hard to do. And we just really want to capture kind of the nuts and bolts of it so that it wasn't too overwhelming for people. I'm very happy to hear that you enjoyed that part. And I'm super impressed. Not that I'm surprised, right? You just such an astute observation that you make. It's, you're obviously very, very observant.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Now, did you ever consider turning either the director or starring roles over to someone else because you did both?
Yeah, man. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, anytime you do a project where you're the writer, director, star, it's always like, oh, this is just a glory project. He did it, you know, doing it for himself, you know, whatever. And people just, they say that very ignorantly because they don't know the backstory. We made offers to, you know, over 12 big star actors, including a couple of them that we had cell phone access to. We really tried to bring this out. We actually auditioned, I think, close to 1,000 men for this role. We really, really searched and ultimately came down to, we kind of ran out of time. And the armor that we had was already molded to my body because we used it in the pilot film. And so it just made sense. And then, you know, this isn't me talking. This is basically our audience feedback. We audience tested well over 2,000 people before we released this. This thing's really, really refined. And it's refined with feedback that we received. And one of the feedback that was given was like, this role was like made for you. You're supposed to do this role. And I'm like, I mean, I didn't expect to do that, but yeah, I definitely took on the mantle when needed and when I felt impressed to do so. And it was just a thrilling experience, a thrilling journey to be involved, an arduous journey, challenging. Gosh, it was challenging, but so rewarding to finally be here and see everybody's work.
Well, Darren, I have a question for you. So were you intimidated by the Arnold Freeberg pictures of with the big arms? Because you definitely had the gun show going on.
Yeah, you know, I usually punt on that question. I have people talking about my arms and stuff. But listen, you know, there's a lot of, you know, we're in such a, like a, just a, especially a racially charged world right now. It's like, dang, can we just look at each other and say, hey, what's the content of our character? Like Martin Luther King said, you know? So I just want to get back to that where we can love each other and have peace and like have dialogue and it's okay to disagree. And, you know, one of those things is there's a lot of people that kind of knock Arnold Freiberg. Man, he consulted on Ten Commandments, man. That guy's a legend. And so is, you know, Cecil B. DeMille. I mean, those guys were just legends. And you know, we knock all these things in the past. Like, so you could do a better job? You know what I mean? Like, it's like we just think we know everything today. And I got to tell you, I love Freiberg's work. I love his stuff.
Well, don't get me wrong. I've met the gentleman, you know, when he was still with us, and I am nothing but admiration for everything, all the work he's done over the years, including what you've done. I mean, I didn't mean to be light about it. I just thought, you know, it looked like you were
in pretty good shape. Yeah, no problem. And sorry, I mean, I need to clarify. I'm not saying that to you at all. It's some feedback, you know, that we get. But yeah, you're all good, man. I didn't get that at all. But yeah, I love Freiberg, and I'm glad you brought it up, man.
Well, Darren, many local movie fans will recognize you from playing the title character in Ephraim's Rescue. But I was noticing over your career, you've also played Jesus, Joseph Smith,
wow,
Hiram Smith, Brigham Young, and now Moroni. Are there any other similar roles that you'd like to play someday that you haven't done yet? Is there another historical figure that you'd like to play?
Well, originally the bigger script that we originally started this journey with was about Captain Moroni, that's always been something that I would, you know, someone I'd love to play, you know, like I wouldn't have to ever act again kind of role. So yeah, I'd love to portray him. Yeah.
Well, Darren, thank you so much for joining us on The Movie Show. Congratulations again on The Oath in theaters wide today. Oathmovie.com is where you can get tickets, or you can just get them at the box office. I know, I'm pretty sure it's playing at most of the – I was noticing that it's opening up most theaters here in Utah. So congratulations and good luck, and I hope the feedback for you continues to be positive.
Hey, you guys are awesome. Thanks for having me.
Sure. All right, take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Well, and we will review The Oath later on in the movie show.
Yep.
We did both get to see it as we were mentioning. But still, that's I liked his perspective on things. There were some questions that I had that you'll hear when we talk about the movie that I'm glad he got a chance to answer.
I was also curious about how he got Billy Zane to be in the movie.
He said they had phone numbers to some pretty big name, so yeah. That's pretty cool. All right, that is Darren Scott, the co-writer, director, and star of The Oath.
The Movie Show.
Why does Lizzie get to get what she wants, but I can't get what I want?
Do you want to deal with your sister if she doesn't get what she wants?
No.
Exactly. I don't negotiate with terrorists.
On KSL News Radio.
That, of course, a clip from 8-Bit Christmas, one of my favorite new series Christmas movies. It came out a couple of years ago. It's basically a Christmas story, only if they retold it in the today, thinking back to a Christmas from the 80s. Love it, and it's full of hilarious. And Steve Zahn's in it, so 8-Bit Christmas is one of my favorite Christmas
movies. Yeah, that was a surprise hit.
Very, very funny. All right, Steve, we want to review, before we finish this portion of the movie show, the movie Eileen.
Ooh. Come on, Eileen.
All right, that's not it. But that song's been in my head ever since I started watching this.
Oh, I thought, wait a minute. My bad. Wrong clip.
How about the real? Thanks, Gustav. I'm sure that you just completely got mixed up there.
Prison is no place for a young lady. You got a big life ahead of you, I'm sure.
I'm just kind of average, I think.
You really think you're a normal person?
Eileen, may I confide in you? People are so ashamed of their desires. I have my own ideas. Kind ideas?
You can never tell anyone, do you understand? Promise me.
All right, what you heard in the clip there is Anne Hathaway and Thomas and McKenzie. It's a movie set in the 1960s called Eileen. Thomas and McKenzie, who you might remember, she was the girl that was hidden in Jojo Rabbit. And now she's a little bit more grown up, but she's Eileen, a somewhat boring and repressed woman who works as a secretary at a boys' prison. And when Anne Hathaway's character shows up to be the new prison therapist, Eileen is fascinated by her and maybe even has, as you heard towards the end of that clip, some deeper feelings than that.
Oh, she's definitely smitten.
So we don't have a ton of time, but I can say without hesitation that unless you've read the book on which this movie is based, you have no idea where this movie is going to end up. You do not.
True, although you can speculate with the relationship she has with her father, who's horrible to her, and then she's working in a prison where people don't like her. She's like a little volcano that is perhaps gonna
explode. But I will say, you'll get a severe case of whiplash towards the very last portion of the movie. A great acting performance, I thought, from Thomas and McKenzie. Like, we're talking Oscar-worthy possible nomination.
Not so much from Anne Hathaway, because I didn't understand the motivation for her character. Why was she so invested in trying to figure out, you know, this kid's problem, not her?
Well, I don't. That's a good question. I'm not going to watch it a second time, so I'll never know exactly. It is rated R for some... pretty early on in the movie, you're going to find out whether it's for you or not. I'll tell you that much.
Well, yeah, there's just some strange sexual content.
Yeah. So, but that's Eileen. It is rated R, and it is in theaters, but it's only playing in a couple of local theaters, I believe. Just one Megaplex and one Cinemark. At the Broadway. The Broadway and at one Megaplex, if I recall correctly.
Three Cinemarks is according
to three Cinemarks. Okay. That is Eileen.
Merry Christmas.
You look like a deranged Easter bunny.
He does not.
He does too. He looks like a pink nightmare.
From the KSL Movie Show.
You know, I guarantee if that pink rabbit's costume from A Christmas Story was made out of minky fabric, the kid wouldn't have been complaining so much.
Oh, that's true.
But this was like Grandma Gladys's like itchy furry pink.
Poor Ralphie. What was his kid's brother's name?
Randy.
Randy, yeah.
Randy and Ralphie. Christmas Story. Great. We've actually taken a lot of texts of what is your favorite Christmas animated special, or what was the other
is
one?
Is Rudolph on there at all?
Christmas movie animated or Christmas special. Oh, Rudolph is definitely getting a lot of votes, Steve. We've got A Charlie Brown Christmas.
How about Polar Express?
Probably. I haven't refreshed it in a little bit, but we're actually getting a very wide variety of selections.
Animated Christmas movie?
Oh, there's a lot, man. Well, no, I guess some of them are just taking it as... most of them are animated. Here's a vote for Klaus on Netflix. I love that one. From a couple of years ago. It's like the origin story of Santa Claus with this kind of unique, revolutionary animation for the time, and it's one of our favorites. It made our annual rotation after just watching. He's like a postman who gets assigned to the North Pole. Does this ring a bell now?
Well, I know I've seen it. I'm just trying to...
Perhaps our guest, Virginia Pierce, the Utah Film Commissioner, that rings a bell for her, maybe?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, no, that's okay. That's okay. I would highly recommend this one on Netflix. Klaus, K-L-A-U-S.
Okay. Yeah, I do recall it, but I'm just not drawn.
It wasn't shot in Utah, so.
Yeah, I was
tech with it.
It was animated.
That were made in Utah.
Well, technically, isn't every Christmas movie take place in Utah if it involves Santa Claus? Because he has to deliver to the whole world, and that means he has to go through Utah.
Oh,
and so
clever. Yeah.
I'm stretching here.
That is a stretch.
But, Virginia, you brought with you today the commish, the list of Christmas movies filmed in Utah over the years. And what is the total?
60. We just pulled this together. 60 holiday films have
been
shot
last
in
year
Utah.
Or?
Yeah, just in the last year. No.
Wouldn't
it's
that be
been,
good,
you know, it's been over a course of, I think the first big one was Mr. Krueger's Christmas, good old Jimmy Stewart, 1980.
That was so good.
And then there were four.
If you don't cry the first time you watch that.
It's a great movie. And there's so much great 1980s Salt Lake in it. You know, like the old ZCMI building. And yeah, it just looks great.
A sleigh ride in the undeveloped hills above Salt Lake City.
And Jimmy Stewart.
And Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
When he
living
puts the mittens on the tree,
apartment.
Man.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
It's a sweetheart movie.
Yeah.
And so what's the most recent one? Is it Best Christmas Ever, which I actually kind of liked, that was shot? A lot of it in Payson.
Yes, a lot in Payson. That shot last year just premiered a couple weeks ago, I think, on Netflix. Haul Out the Holly, Lit Up, which is the latest Hallmark Channel, kind of Haul Out the Holly 2.
So that's one that they shot this year? And
no, it just premiered last weekend. And that is Lacey Chabert, who is,
we
love.
She's the queen of Christmas movies.
And then there was one called Destined 2, Christmas Once More. That was, and there, these two movies were available on the Great American Family Channel, which is kind of
wasn't
growing.
The Lindsay Lohan Falling for Christmas? That was
that
here
was
too
last year.
But
yeah.
That was last year, right?
Yes.
I do remember watching that one and think, I recognize those mountains.
Yeah. Yep, they shot up in Park City mostly.
What's your favorite Christmas movie that was shot in Utah?
Oh, that was shot in Utah?
Yeah, so off that list, what's your favorite?
Con Air.
It's
that's
Christmas.
Not Christmas. Is it
the
Christmas?
I don't know if you really say that's a Christmas.
No,
is that like buy
her
Die Hard?
Was that for her birthday?
It was because he hasn't seen her. He's getting out of prison.
Oh, all right.
But I was like, for a second, you did. I was like, wait a minute, was it?
No.
I mean, there are so many good ones. It's really hard to pick. I mean, look at all these.
Have there ever any been shot near your own personal neighborhood?
Like,
has there ever been a shot in some place that you have gone that was not related to the movie, but you've been to that place?
I think the Hallmarks, they shoot a lot in and around neighborhoods in Salt Lake.
That is amazing.
There's a great, if listeners out there know about Letterboxd, letterboxd.com.
Yes.
We have a holiday list there. Steve's just looking at it. There's a lot. And
what's the list called to look for? Utah Christmas movies?
Filmed in Utah. 'Tis the season.
Okay, so if you're on Letterboxd, if you have a membership or an account there,
are you telling me that Silent Night, Deadly Night was filmed here?
My brother's friend was the kid in that. You were shot back in like the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, John Best was the kid in that.
Maybe or even earlier than the 80s.
And the Grinch?
The Grinch scene where they come down the mountain with the dog to
the live action Grinch with Jim Carrey? I did not know that.
That was up at Snowbird.
Seriously? I did not know.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. So you can ski over the same
Christmas
ridge
dragon.
Coming down from Mount Crumpet?
I know, right? Amazing.
Wow. Look at all these
movies. I know. There's a lot of good ones. So, yeah, everyone should get out and watch some Made in Utah holiday fun.
I like it. Especially Mr. Krueger's Christmas. Is that
but
available
if you haven't
somewhere?
Seen, I think it actually you can see it on YouTube. It's a short.
Yeah.
And so it's an easy one to watch with your family. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And, a little classic Salt Lake story.
Somebody we know directed that. Didn't, who?
I think it was Keith Merrill, wasn't it?
Was it Keith? Oh, wow.
Is that right?
I can't remember.
Keith Merrill did.
I'm going to tell you.
He did
that
cowboy.
Yeah. Okay, I was right.
It was Keith.
You got me doubting myself. I'm the commish, I know.
Yeah. What I said, even if it wasn't him, now it is. I decree.
Yes.
You busy?
We are busy because, as I know I've talked about before, next year is the 100th anniversary of film in Utah. And on January 12th, we are launching a very large exhibit about film in Utah.
Hey, that's usually the day you come on the movie show.
It is the day I come on the movie show, and I'm going to be talking all about it and how cool it is. And it's up at the Capitol, so everyone should be able to
like upstairs
see
or
it.
Downstairs?
And then you'll deliver the long-promised trailer.
And then
with a familiar voice that
trailer.
We may or may not recognize.
Yes.
So how long is the piece itself that you put together?
So it takes up the whole fourth floor of the exhibit, and it's up all year.
No, I'm talking about the
oh,
film.
The piece that we're going to share next year with someone that we know.
Eventually.
I think it's 2 minutes.
Oh, it's only 2 minutes?
It's
yeah.
kind of like a sizzle reel of all the great stuff that's yes. been shot in Utah.
I thought it was a little longer than that. Okay.
No, it's a quickie.
Okay. Cool. Well, that we'll look forward to that then. So since this is our last chance to talk to you this year, we'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas, a Happy
yes,
Holidays, and a wonderful New Year until we meet again on
Better
the day of the big exhibit.
Your daughter another blanket. So.
I know. Everyone should get up here and take advantage of these good sales like I do.
Yeah. A movie 55, that's a great deal.
It's a great deal. Yeah.
Well, Virginia, thank you for continuing to be a friend of the movie show. Best of luck now with all the strikes over. 2024 is going to be an amazing year
amazing.
Filled with Utah scenes and actors
so
in
good
so
stuff.
Many different movies and shows.
Yes.
How's Kevin? Is he okay?
Kevin's doing great.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. That's the Utah Film Commish, Virginia Pierce. When we get back from our break, we are going to have a big streaming review of a couple of different things. One, a Christmas show, and one about a crime that, for some reason, has never really had a lot of specials made about it that happened 43 years ago today in New York City on the west end of the park.
Planning a weekend on the couch? Streaming your favorite movie or a new show? Andy and Steve sort through it all so you only binge the best. It's the Movie Show Streaming Reviews on KSL News Radio.
We were talking Christmas movies with Virginia Pierce, the commissioner of the Utah Film Commission. So let's start our big streaming review of the week. Let's be honest, the biggest of the streaming reviews we talked about already, which was Leave the World Behind, but we wanted it to have its own segment because it was kind of a big deal and it was pretty good.
Yeah, and has the star power is pretty amazing. In
yeah, but the other one that you didn't expect to like as much as you did.
Loved it.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid Christmas, Cabin Fever.
Have you been good the last year?
Not exactly naughty.
But definitely gross.
Have I ever steered you wrong?
A bunch of times.
I think my freckles might have frostbite.
Do not make eye contact.
Read about this family that got snowed in. And to survive, they had to eat each other.
Yuck.
All right, this is the second animated movie based on the characters created by Jeff Kinney. Now, we had the live-action movies a few years ago. I actually didn't mind the first one.
I didn't mind it, but it
was the kid got worse as the thing went along. At least he just got the character was written more dislikable every single time. But that's not the case for these cartoon ones. These are based much more faithful to the drawings that
yes.
were in the book.
That's where that's
and it
where
works,
works
really well. And it's a cute movie. Let's see, Greg and Rowley. They're hiding out from the consequences of creating a giant snowman snowball, and it accidentally rolls down the hill and creates some mayhem. So they don't want to get busted for doing it because, of course, Santa's watching everything, and Greg wants a Game
elf.
Station 9000, and Mom's got a creepy elf on the shelf that looks like something out of a Simpsons nightmare
Didn't,
or something.
Like, Grandma make it or something?
Probably. But at any rate, Greg, but then things get complicated when there's a huge snowstorm and everyone's trapped in their house. That's where the cabin fever in the title comes from, is the family having to bunker down for 5 days.
Yeah, because he can't get to where he needs to
hide the evidence of
yes.
his involvement with
right.
the snowball. So it's a really it's pretty clever written and honestly one of the best things. It's only an hour long. Like it's not 90 minutes. It's not 2 hours. It's 64 minutes. It doesn't feel too long. It actually felt longer than I don't
know.
Maybe I got that backwards. It took longer, but it didn't feel overly long. How about that?
Well, to me, Greg's always trying to get away with stuff. And,
yes.
you know, this is all about getting the ultimate Christmas present. And so he's so selfish. So this takes a turn that I didn't expect because normally, he just rides it all the way home.
That was the problem with the movies. They never pulled back a little bit.
Oh, okay.
He just was a jerk all the way to the finish, and he barely learned a lesson, if anything at all.
Well, this one has a very sweet message. The snowplow driver lady was just absolutely adorable, and I thought that was a great way to make that movie work.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Christmas, Cabin Fever is on Disney Plus. Now, the other one that debuted that I was actually so interested in, I watched the first episode like 2 months ago. It's coming to Apple TV Plus, and it's called John Lennon, Murder Without a Trial. Now, we don't have sound on it, but it's a three-part documentary that explores the assassination is a correct word for what happened to John Lennon outside of his apartment on Central Park West on December 8th, 1980, which was 43 years ago today.
Wow.
Did you watch all three episodes? I still only saw the first one. I didn't get through the other two. But what I understand is, well, go ahead and tell us what you saw.
Well, basically, I'm trying to find my notes here. The first episode is really the best because it explains things that the detail.
Yes.
So like the cab driver who's just, dropping off a fare and sees the whole thing. So you get like a first-person explanation. And then the police officers show up. And then what's his name?
Mark David Chapman.
Mark David Chapman just standing there with his copy of Catcher in the Rye, which I thought was really weird. And then him trying to explain that he thought if he killed Lennon, he'd become him. That comes up in the other episodes.
Okay.
So the other part of it is more about, do you try him as a person who's insane or, will he be tried? I mean, the problem with this movie is that Without a Trial is the title, and it's basically because they plea bargained it out. The judge didn't want a big old media circus going on. The guy confessed. So what are you supposed to do? Just have a trial anyway? So I felt like the rest of the three-part series was just a little thin. They were trying to make something out of what's not there.
So maybe a two-episode would have been a little better.
Yeah, maybe. But
the thing that was neat about it was that they also had interviews with people who'd never spoken on camera or on the record before. One of them was the doorman at the building.
Right.
And for me, I've watched everything on the Kennedy assassination. So I'm used to all the different video things. And I realized, other than the fact that it happened, I knew almost literally nothing about it.
Yep.
I knew that he was shot dead. I knew they announced it on Monday Night Football. I was only barely five when it happened, and so I wasn't one of those things where was I when I heard it, because I didn't know who the Beatles were when I was five. But I knew it was a significant milestone in history, but I knew nothing about it. So that was, to me, was the draw, was to actually learn something about an event that I didn't know anything about.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that when Reagan was shot was just a few weeks or after
that. Now that one I do remember, because I was watching cartoons and they interrupted it.
That was what,
81? It happened in the day. Yeah, it happened during the day. And so the John Lennon thing happened in late evening. And so I think if John Lennon had been shot earlier in the day, I would have heard about, I remember where I was when that happened.
Well, they were making comparisons with the legality of somebody who might be insane versus somebody who just,
they wanted to use the same defense, if I remember reading something about
that. So there is some of that.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting. Yoko, what she went through, there's conversations with her. There was the last interview that he did. Right before he went to the
Some, you get to listen to some audio of the thing he did in the studio right before he went home.
And all the people that worked with him on the studio that day. So there's a lot of background information, and I thought it was pretty cool.
All right, that is John Lennon, Murder Without a Trial on Apple TV Plus.
Planning a weekend on the couch? Streaming your favorite movie or a new show? Andy and Steve sort through it all so you only binge the best. It's the Movie Show Streaming Reviews on KSL News Radio.
And our streaming reviews are sponsored by the Joshua Stern Team. Visit sternteam.com to learn your home's real value in 30 seconds. Click sell, then home evaluation. Steve, the texts continue to pour in on your favorite animated movie for Christmas or animated TV special. We have got several votes for Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Oh.
The claymation. There were so many of those stop motion animation. I'm sorry. Claymation is different than stop motion animation.
Right. Yeah, there
technically,
was a whole...
Rudolph is stop motion, but the California Raisins are claymation.
Right.
That an important distinction. Frosty the Snowman, I'm not surprised to see that one. By the way, never watch Frosty Returns, the 1992. It is a garbage heap of a cartoon. The original Frosty, fine. Yeah. Don't be surprised. I watched it, so you don't have to. The 1992 Frosty Returns.
Well, no, I want to see
it. It's so terrible. It's so terrible. I love The Little Drummer Boy, another stop-motion animation. Oh. That one's from Mike. Listen to this. Now, I'm sure that a lot of people feel like this texture. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I've loved it and watched it since I was a little girl, and now watch it and enjoy it with my granddaughter. And now we will watch it with her new little sister, my new granddaughter.
Yeah.
So fun and special.
Why not?
Oh, I agree with that.
And
I
Charlie Brown Christmas. Is Charlie, that on there?
Yep. The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. They didn't specify it's the animated or the live action, but
well, it's
who
be
doesn't
old,
love Max
the
like
Boris
they said?
Karloff.
Ah, or Charlie Brown Christmas in the original Grinch cartoon. Here's another one. What can I say? How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Yeah. All right. And then here's one. Die Hard. And I will note that those who don't feel that this is a Christmas isn't... Okay. Let me read this
one,
text verbatim.
One, not animated. Two.
I know.
Okay.
I will note that those who don't feel this, that it isn't Christmas without Hans Gruber falling off the Nakatomi Tower are the same people who think My Favorite Things is a Christmas song.
By the way, that scene, that shot where Alan Rickman's falling, you know, in slow motion, he didn't realize that they were going to, like, that was happening.
Yeah, they told him we're going to go on three, and they let him go on two.
Yeah, and the look on his face is absolute terror.
And they have.
It was real.
Have you seen the advent calendars that are Hans Gruber falling down one story of Nakatomi Plaza from the 25th down to the Christmas Day?
That's just mean.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. I'm guessing that this texture might have that advent calendar.
Sure,
all right, Steve, let's review on streaming Mr. Monk's Last Case.
I have traumatic symptoms unprecedented in psychiatric history.
That was no accident. He was murdered. You have to help me.
When COVID hit, I was in bad shape. This is mine.
Everybody's you.
They're gonna hate it.
So how does that feel to be working again?
Like riding a bicycle.
All right, that of course is Tony Shalhoub as the lovable TV detective Adrian Monk.
You know why I haven't missed Monk? Is because then he went over to be Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's dad, and he's the same neurotic character.
Really?
Well, not as, but Monk moved over to Mrs. Maisel, and I was happy with that.
So neurotic and obsessive Adrian Monk. It's been 14 years since the last new content from the Monk universe.
Well, and how perfect that the pandemic hadn't, you know, like, come on.
That's what I was going to say was...
Sorry.
That's No. I'm glad you pointed that out, because that was the first thing I was going to say was, I am certain that Monk fans have wanted to know how Monk dealt with the pandemic, and it is very funny. They deal with it. It's only kind of a thing towards the beginning of the movie where they show what it was like and how he spent so much money on COVID tests. And he basically looks like he's in a hazmat suit.
My favorite was when they're at the airport and everybody's doing hand sanitizer or the wipes in there, and they go, oh, look, Monk, they're just like you. And he goes, that's not going to go well, or something like that.
Or no, he's like, I wouldn't wish that on anybody, thing.
Yeah.
And so there's, of course, all of those things. His neuroses and his obsessions are played for comedic laughs. Without giving away too much, it's a very personal case for Monk with his stepdaughter, Molly. He comes out of retirement to help a case to benefit her as she's getting ready for her wedding. And, I mean, that's really all you need to say. It's the gang's back together again. It felt like an elongated TV movie, honestly. And it's going to Peacock, so it basically is just that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this couldn't have dealt with a theatrical release. I just don't think it would have the gravitas
for it. There's no place for it there. I mean,
that's what I mean.
I watched the first 30 minutes, and they literally the accident or murder happens at the 30-minute mark, and that would never have happened before in a Monk actual show.
So as I watched it, it's kind of like hanging out with an old friend again. All the people are back. They're doing the things that are funny. They're doing the things that are enjoyable. And this time they're just trying to, guess what, solve a murder. And then there's some personal stuff with Monk that they go through, too, that I thought you haven't gotten that far yet.
I don't remember Trudy being, that was his wife, right?
Yeah.
And was she ever?
I haven't seen the later seasons of Monk, so I don't know. But I will tell you that there's a pretty kind of a touching thing. Honestly, this was one of my dad's favorite shows, and so I really missed my dad while I was watching it.
Yeah.
And so that's Mr. Monk's Last Case on Peacock. And then finally, this is one I know you didn't see, Steve. Or wait, did you?
What?
It's on Netflix. It's a new series called My Life with the Walter Boys.
No, I ran out of time.
Not the Alter Boys, the Walter Boys. All right, so basically this is what the teenage girls are going to be talking about, much like they did with The Kissing Booth and much like they did with Wednesday and all of those things. It's not as good as Wednesday, but In fact, I didn't think it was that great at all, personally. But here's what it's about. 15-year-old Jackie has to leave her active life in New York City to live in Colorado with her mom's best friend after Jackie's family dies in a car crash. Well, she struggles to fit in as an outsider at school and
what?
In her new home.
No.
I know, shocking. But things aren't completely terrible, Steve, because her mom's best friend just happens to live in a house full of, like, 8 boys.
Oh, no.
So, 2 of whom Jackie starts to develop an interest in.
2 of them?
But will she choose the cute and sensitive brother named Alex or the super hot bad boy brother named Cole?
Well, I know which the father would say.
Well, that's My Life with the Walter Boys. It is rated TV-14, and all 10 episodes are available on Netflix.
I actually thought
the weakness of the series was the lead girl. She didn't work for me. I didn't find her that great of an actress. That was my opinion. But I'm not the aimed audience. My teenage daughters will probably love it.
Well, I heard, just read a blurb, and it said, seen it, done it, not as good.
Yeah, and it's based on a book. In fact, it's apparently based on some digital book that apparently a lot of teenage girls read about 10 or 13 years ago. And I was watching comments on the trailer on YouTube, and they're like, oh, I read this on whatever Substack or whatever it was called at the time. It wasn't Substack, but it was something else. To the point where I had to look up what's this thing that all of them are referring to. But it was basically
like
an underground book? No, it was like a digital publishing.
Oh.
So, anyway, that is My Life with the Walter Boys on Netflix.
10, 9. The KSL Movie Show. Top 10.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
That goat means it's time. The sound of the goat means it's time for the Movie Show Top 10.
This
is sponsored by Call Climate Services. Hey, we're in winter. It's snowing today. It's probably too late for the furnace ahead of season, but guess what? You'll find out today if your furnace needs a tune-up. And we've got a place for you to go.
If you haven't figured it out by now, you...
Yeah. Well, you know, some people try to save money, they don't turn it on. You're not going to make it through today without turning it on. So call our friends at Call Climate Services. Scott Call and his amazing team will take good care of you.
Absolutely.
All right, Steve. 10. Number 10 on our Movie Show Top 10. I actually got to find my list here. There it is. It is Thanksgiving. We're almost to Christmas, but we've still got Thanksgiving.
You know, for a movie that didn't cost very much to make originally, it's made $36 million. And that's the deal with horror films. They're nothing to make, and they do quite well. And this one already has been greenlit for a sequel.
Yes, and Eli Roth. Do you like Eli Roth personally? Or his style of...
I mean, he was in that movie, Inglourious B-Boys, you know, that movie. And he was very funny in that. But he's got a kind of a rough edge to him. So if you're kind of a novice to horror films, maybe don't start with an Eli Roth.
Okay, well, then that'll tell me to avoid Eli Roth for a little bit.
Completely.
Number 9, Silent Night. Another, wow, it only debuted at number 9, huh? That was kind of our big movie of the week last week. Steve, people didn't listen to you.
Yeah, apparently not, because it made less than $3 million, and foreign, it made $319,000.
Dude, I thought maybe it would do a little bit better than that. John Woo and Joel Kinnaman, and
it's actually pretty good dialogue.
It is. It's a good, solid action film. If you're a diehard movie fan, then I think you should enjoy Silent Night. Number 8, The Shift.
That one was weird for me, but it's made $5.5 million domestic, nothing foreign, so it's at 5.5.
All right, and I liked The Shift, but I felt like it was reaching further than it was able to grasp. That's a weird way to say it, but it wasn't bad. But the trailer promised me a movie that I didn't feel like the movie delivered me. And that's where I felt a little bit disappointed, because I watched the trailer and I thought, this looks good. But I watched the movie first and then was like, dang.
You know, the best thing about that movie was Neil McDonough playing...
He was very good as
benefactor.
Playing the benefactor / the devil.
Yeah.
Now, all right, at number 7, we've got Animals.
Just Animal.
Animal, which, do I know what that is? It's not ringing a bell.
It's a film from India. It's about a kid and his father. The father has to work a lot, so he doesn't see much of his dad. So it's not a Bollywood movie, but it's an action film from India.
Okay, well, it obviously didn't open here. We would have mentioned it or something.
Well, it did play out at the Jordan Landing. Where a lot of the films from India.
I should just keep my mouth shut. Number 6, Napoleon.
Napoleon has done 48 domestic, 91 foreign, so 139, but it's
Napoleon is not satisfied with his spot at number 6.
Well, he shouldn't be because it costs $200
million. On his way to exile.
But Ridley Scott couldn't care less. He just makes the movies he likes to make.
Yes, he does. Number 5, Wish, Disney. Two weeks in and it's already down to number 5. What's its total?
It's at 43 and 40, so it's $83 million. But again, this was
that's worldwide $83 million. Yeah. Number 4, Trolls Band Together.
This one's done pretty well. 76 domestic, 87 foreign, 163. So, and that's his third week. So yeah, it's doing okay.
Okay, and then our pick of the week last week, as far as theatrical release, Godzilla Minus One at number 3. That's a good debut for a Japanese language film.
Exactly. 14 domestic, 27 foreign. It's 41. But I guarantee you, these numbers are going to go up instead of down.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because the word on the street is Godzilla Minus One might be the best Godzilla movie ever made.
Well, it's the best one I've ever seen, but I've only seen a few.
I've seen them all, and this is definitely one of the best.
And again, I don't always recommend the more expensive seats at a theater, but if you want to see Godzilla Minus One in the D-Box, the 4D seating... It is an incredibly intense experience that was very enjoyable.
For a couple more bucks, it's kind of a fun ride.
It really is. I don't know if all movies are, but this one was a really good one for it. All right, and then number 2, The Hunger Games, A Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Done really well. 124 domestic, 123 foreign. It's 247 after 3 weeks.
And it was knocked off by last week's number 1, Renaissance, a film by Beyoncé.
22 domestic, 6 foreign at 28. It's not even close to Taylor Swift's big numbers opening weekend. But
it's pretty good.
Yeah, Renaissance is
doing
well.
That is not bad at all. So that is the Movie Show Top 10, sponsored by Call Climate Services. When we return on the Movie Show, we will review, I believe it is, yes, we'll talk about The Oath on the other side.
Ah.
Merry Christmas.
Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together.
From the KSL Movie Show.
I love hearing those movie show during the Christmas season when we come back from breaks and we get to hear a clip from a Christmas movie. Our text question of the day today has been, what is your favorite animated Christmas movie or animated Christmas special on TV? Another Year Without a Santa Claus vote. Especially the Miser brothers, Heat Miser and Cold Miser. And then I believe it's the Year Without a Santa Claus, or the Santa Claus Is Coming to Town, that has Burgermeister Meister Burger. It's hard to keep track of all these characters.
What was the one young guy that was like a relative of, Arthur Christmas?
Yeah. That's a good one. You know, I haven't seen that one on the list today. Charlie Brown Christmas Special.
Yeah.
How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Christmas on Sesame Street. Ah, here's a vote for Violent Night, which isn't animated. That's a text we were supposed to get last week, probably.
Or ever.
Let's see. Oh, somebody's nominating the Community, the series, TV series Community.
Oh.
With Joel McHale. And,
yeah.
The episode where it was a Community claymation special where they're all trying to help Abed, Danny Pudi's character.
Yeah.
That was actually a really good one. Let's see. Yeah, so those are the kinds of things. Frosty the Snowman, another vote for that. Text 57500, your favorite.
I wonder who could have
animated.
Sent the eclectic Community one.
I don't know. Oh, I should have known. It was way too specific. It was our on-site producer, Stone. Nice. Well played, Stone. All right, let's talk about our other big movie of the week, Steve. That is, and we interviewed the director earlier today, and star and writer on the show, and it is The Oath.
I'll never call you king!
Know this, Moroni.
Blessed Father.
Mahigada will tear this world apart.
I seal this record unto you.
Till she finds your secret record.
And unto he who will one day discover it unto the world.
He came to them. He came to our fathers.
So The Oath tells a story centered around a character that members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints will recognize from the Book of Mormon. It's actually an action drama with faith elements mixed in. It's set sometime around 400 AD, somewhere in the Americas. In the movie itself, it just says basically those things. And as we mentioned in the interview, it sets the scene with a montage telling the story of two brothers whose descendants had battled each other for centuries before one of the descendant groups finally wiped out the other. Now, just one man remains from the Nephite tribe, a man named Moroni, and after being in hiding for years, he saves the life of an abused mistress of the king of one of the rival tribes, a king played deliciously by Billy Zane with a giant beard. And in the process, Moroni begins to finally feel less alone, but he still must keep his oath to God and preserve the record of his people.
Yeah. Actually, it was a pretty cool story. I thought, you know, we don't have that information in the Book of Mormon, so why not, you know, make a story about it?
Everything that's in the Book of Mormon record was reproduced faithfully in the movie, meaning they didn't take liberties with, like, there wasn't anything, like, they didn't misquote any lines that would have come straight out of the book. But
no,
there's a whole huge area to work in.
Yeah, they filled in the blanks with some creative thought process, and I actually thought what they did was actually really pretty good.
I was pretty apprehensive going in. Just because these things are kind of personal to me, and and you just never know how somebody's going to, you know, do it. And I was really pleased with what they put together. There were a couple of kind of cringe moments for me, but it was just sort of getting used to, when you're taking characters where I know a lot about very specific parts of the characters, and then it was just kind of being prepared for the apocryphal, as a way to say it, apocryphal.
The addendum.
Yeah, the things where they're like, but I also think it was a very clever way to do it, a clever way to tell the story, and I appreciated the wide-angle approach where it doesn't just come in and you're supposed to already know who Moroni is, and you're supposed to know all the things that happen. If you do, it's certainly a bonus. But if you don't, I got vibes of Last of the Mohicans. I got vibes of Gladiator. I got vibes of Braveheart. Like, and these are all movies that I like.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty well done. Now, I asked him the question during the interview, Steve, about did you think about giving either the director title or the lead actor title to somebody else? Because that's where I felt like, you know, in the film criticism portion, that's where I felt like the weakest part came in. There was, I just felt
just too much to do.
It was just too much to do. Like, I felt like some of the scenes where he's doing, like, monologues into the camera, it would have helped if he had a director who had the overall vision for the film to, like, say, okay, I need you to get, I need this out of you. You're going to say this, but I kind of want to get this from you. And so the most talented people in Hollywood could maybe pull it off, but I feel like even they, that's going to be a difficult thing, and that there's a reason that the best movies usually have a different actor, lead actor, than a director, because the one can get what they need from the other. And so I thought he did very well on both sides, but I feel like it could have been even better if, and as he told us, you know, they did offer to other people before it fell to him. So I was kind of glad to hear that, but he did do a good job in it.
Yeah, no, I was afraid. Say, I saw the Book of Mormon movie years ago and was trying to get out of the theater before anybody accosted me about what I thought.
This is way better than that. Let me just put that up there first.
I was sitting behind the poor guy that played Nephi, Nephi in that movie, and oh my gosh! I mean, my heart goes out to anybody trying to make a movie,
right?
But having to make that movie, it was extremely difficult, and my fear was this was going to be, and so my expectations were exceeded dramatically.
And I will say the love story was pretty good. That was a part I kind of had to be like, okay, all right, they're doing this with the story.
No, but it just felt because kind of natural, though.
Right, but that's what I was going to say. Like, there's also rules when you make a movie. If there wasn't somebody for Moroni to talk to, this would be a very plain and boring movie with a bunch of voiceovers. There's got to be somebody for him to play the dialogue off of, so he's going to have to create a character for them to talk to.
That's true.
And so, like I said, as I watched it, I was actually pretty good with it, and I ended up giving it a 3 out of 4 star.
Oh, I gave it a B minus. I thought, you know, most of it worked. I thought Billy Zane chewed up a lot of scenery.
He sure did. He sure did.
He got paid, and he did everything he could to just, boy, am I a rotten dude. So that was fun.
All right. Well, that is The Oath. It is playing in wide release here in Utah, and it is from Great Scott to Darren Scott's production studio. So if you missed it earlier, you can go back and listen to our interview with Darren earlier in the show. Just later today, the whole movie show podcast will post, and you'll get a chance to hear that interview with him. It was a good interview, and you know, apprehensive. Was it perfect? I didn't think it was perfect, but I thought it was a really solid effort, and I liked it.
Yeah.
The Movie Show.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, Santa's coming to town.
Santa here? I know him.
on KSL News Radio.
Ah, Elf, such a classic Christmas movie. Steve, we've got to talk about the movie that, unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see yet, but one that people will be hearing a lot about, especially as we get into next year's awards season, and that is Maestro, which is coming to Netflix in a couple of weeks, but is opening in a couple of theaters as of today.
Yes.
Do we have sound?
Hey, Maestro!
Hey, Kramer.
I'm in here. How's it going?
Fine.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
I'm sorry, Maestro.
Oh, sorry. Is that not the right clip? It's not the Maestro episode of Seinfeld?
Did I get it wrong again?
Oh, my gosh. Will you guys quit messing with me? I'm like, what is that?
No. Play the real clip, Gustavo.
Here we go.
He can be the first great American conductor.
I love people so much that it's hard for me to be alone. And music keeps me glued to life.
You know how much you need me to. Summer doesn't sing it, and nothing sings in you. And if nothing sings in you, then you can't make music.
Lisa reminds me of Carey Mulligan.
Maybe.
Anyway.
So, Bradley Cooper. It's been a little while since we saw him as the obnoxious boyfriend in Wedding Crashers. That guy was such a jerk. Do you remember that character?
He was, yes. He was right. He was the one who was bullying
Rachel McAdams.
He was bullying Owen Wilson.
Yeah. So, with that in mind, you know, then he's done American Sniper, and he's done, you know, The Star Is Born, and The Voice of Rocket.
I
so all of these are just kind of in there, and then he shows up with this prosthetic nose. To look more like, you know, Leonard Bernstein.
The famous composer.
Yes. And so at first, it really distracted me, especially he's got this different voice, you know, he talks like this. But then I see clips of Leonard Bernstein, and I'm like, holy crap, he nailed it. And as we go along, I mean, people are like, oh, you know, you put the Jewish nose on him.
Right. I do recall some of the press about that.
But the guy that did the prosthetics is like renowned, and so he was actually offended. He's like, I'm not trying to, you know, do the hook beak thing like you think. I'm trying to
this is not a caricature.
Right. This is an absolute portrayal. And he was offended that people thought anyway, that has subsided. And once you see it, and once you get into the thread of who he's trying to portray, it works. And it is there's a black and white section early on, and then I don't remember when it turned into color, but all of a sudden it does, and it's, you know, but here's the thing.
Probably around the time of Singing in the Rain. Just kidding.
I don't remember exactly
but
when.
But it does. It starts black and white, shifts to color.
Yes.
Does this cover his whole life?
No. It picks up when he meets his wife-to-be. Her name is Felicia, and played by Carey Mulligan. And he's just so charming, and but he has proclivities, both male and female. He likes everybody, like he says, I love everyone.
Okay.
And she kind of knows that. She knows that, you know, he's just being Leonard.
Okay.
But once they get married, he becomes famous, and they have three kids. She's thinking, dude, you know, tone
it
down.
You're a family man now.
Yeah, tone it down. And instead, he amplifies. And so that dynamic between the wife and him
is that the core of the movie?
Well, it is probably for me. I thought watching Carey Mulligan go through the process of, you know, I love him. Now I just want to kill him. And then the conversations they have in between, this is a performance that she gives that is absolutely, I mean, top drawer. This would be my pick for best actress of this year. And I've seen some great performances this year. He's really good playing, you know, Leonard Bernstein, but boy, it's her that carries this movie. But the music, it's all Leonard Bernstein.
Give me a couple of tunes, because right off the top of my head, I'm going to
okay,
get
West
crucified.
Side Story.
Okay, I know that one.
He did West Side Story. He did on the Waterfront.
Okay.
These are in scores, Candide. But he also directed a symphony, and they actually filmed it at the very cathedral in England where Bernstein did it in 1973. And there is Bradley Cooper playing, and they do the whole symphony. You know, it's like a 5 or 10 minute piece, and he's up there, and the look and the feel of this movie is extraordinary. This will be nominated for an Academy Award. I can't see how it wouldn't.
What was your letter grade?
An A.
Oh, this was an A.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So, would you nominate this for Best Picture?
I probably would. I haven't seen everything yet. There's still a few
but
movies.
But what you've seen so far, this would go in your top five of the year maybe?
Probably. Definitely top 10. Like, it's just I was surprised that Bradley Cooper could travel that far. And, of course, his two producers on this movie were a guy named Martin Scorsese and Steven Spielberg.
So
but they said,
have you heard of them before?
I've heard of them, and I think they're good.
Up and coming, maybe.
But they told him all along that you will direct this movie. They were both going to. And then when Star Was Born came out, Spielberg came up to him and said, I'm not directing this film, you are. So
wait, Cooper directed it too?
Yes.
Okay, so now what you're telling me then is,
he
co-wrote, barely said directed. About writing and
I know,
directing.
I know, don't.
No. So it can be done. But I mean, but you'd say Carey Mulligan had the better of the two. You'd say Carey Mulligan's was more.
Yes, her role was just so interesting, and how, you know, sometimes you get the mealy-mouthed wife like, oh, I'm sorry.
Right.
She was just as tough as could be, and so her whole arc of her character was like, I am a strong woman. I can put up with you for a while, but you know, after a while, it's like, look. This isn't working for me. We got to fix this or you're adused.
So that is Maestro, and it is playing locally.
Broadway, Jordan Commons, maybe others, but I...
Is this worth seeing on the big screen, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. The music for... I mean, just the sound system, if you can see it on something that has like Atmos or whatever, the score is just ridiculously amazing.
Maestro, rated R?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
rated R.
Two theaters, but it will come to Netflix in a couple of weeks.
On the 20th.
All right. When we come back on the movie show, we will have Telephone Torture on KSL News Radio.
The KSL Movie Show. Telephone Torture.
It's time for Telephone Torture, that fun part of the movie show each week where we give away prizes. Sometimes we joke and say they're worth up to dollars, but sometimes the prizes are worth up to many dollars.
Like dozens of dollars.
Exactly, like we did last week when we had somebody win a Megatub prize pack from our friends at Megaplex Theaters. That was just super awesome. All right, Steve, so our subject today for Telephone Torture, the theme is a Julia Roberts movie based on the Leave the World Behind movie that we reviewed earlier in the show.
Mystic Pizza.
At least let me give out the clues before you give it all away.
I'm just Julia Roberts, I see.
All right, so it is a Julia Roberts movie.
Pretty
so
woman.
If you want a chance to win, we're going to ask three questions of three callers. Call 801-575-TALK. 801-575-8255. If, and we're at the telephone torture is evolving as the movie show evolves. And it's also a good time to remind you that beginning in 2024, which is in just about 4 weeks, The movie show will begin at 11 o'clock in the morning instead of 9 o'clock in the morning.
I got a text from a friend. Goes, oh, so now you're on at 11. No. Does anybody pay attention? No. We don't do that until 2024.
Yes. The movie show will continue to evolve in 2024. On January 5th, 2024, the movie show will begin at its new time of 11 to 1.
Yes.
Through the rest of December, we will continue to be from 9 to noon every Friday. So with that aside, let's take... our first telephone torture contestant. Who's this? Don.
If you say Star
Wars,
all right.
Don has a back door. Don has a back door number to the station. He has to.
He has the Binford 5000.
The Binford 5000 guaranteed to get on any radio of your choice. All right, Don, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, first question. This movie features two Oscar winners in the lead roles, though they did not win their awards for this movie.
How about Stepmom?
Stepmom, Julia Roberts.
Nice.
Is that correct, Gustavo?
Negative, Ghost Rider.
But Don, I appreciate an excellent guess.
And it wasn't Star Wars.
Yeah, that's Steve appreciates that it wasn't Star Wars. And I appreciate that. That was a great guess, Don.
That was a great guess.
Good luck. We'll take our next telephone torture contestant right now. Who's this? Hello, who's this? Listen to the phone, not the radio. All right.
It sounds like your phone's
we
garbage.
We have scared them away. Do we have anybody else on the lines? 801-575. Oh, Janice. Janice, didn't you win recently?
No.
It's been a while.
Well, you're smart, then. That's the right answer. All right. First of all, do you think you know the Julia Roberts movie based on the one clue I've already given out?
I don't know.
You don't have to
I'm
guess. I'm just saying, do you think
low.
It is? Okay. Okay. Think. Keep thinking, and I'm going to read you the second question.
This okay, movie... sorry. I should have turned my radio down.
Yes, please turn your radio down.
We already did that.
I'm just going to say, if you think you know the answer, I'm going to read you question number two, and then you can guess, okay?
Okay.
All right. Here's question number two. This movie is based on a book. In fact, the author has admitted that they pictured Julia Roberts as the main character when they were writing this book.
Okay. Is there any more questions, or is that it?
No, you only get that. We only one question per contestant.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to still say Eat, Pray, Love.
Eat, Pray, Love, based on a book. That's... stars an Oscar
yeah.
winner.
Yeah.
Is that correct, Gustavo?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh, that is an awesome guess, Janice, but that is incorrect.
Okay.
Keep trying,
well, thank
though.
You.
You're yeah. welcome. Good luck. All right. Last chance for our callers to win on Telephone Torture. Now,
better be pretty obvious.
Again, this is the evolution of the movie show, and I see we've making already
excuses.
Got people texting in the correct answer.
Oh, you got it.
But we've been talking about it, and what we're going to do now is we want you to be a member of the movie show club. So we'll get to that. Let's ask our third question first. They're going to get this for sure, so it doesn't even matter what people are texting.
All right, we'll
who
see.
Do we have on the line?
Jill.
Who's that?
I think you said Jill.
Jill.
Jill? Jill? Okay, Jill. Are you a big Julia Roberts fan?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you know the answer. I can read you the question, but I'm just curious. Do you think you know the answer already?
I think you've asked the ones I know, maybe.
Okay. Well, then here, let me read one more, and this will hopefully help you. The movie, while ignored at the Academy Awards, did earn Julia Roberts a 1994 MTV Movie Award for Best Female Performance, as voted on by fans and not the
studio. Still a hard question.
I'm trying. I'm hoping that the year will give you a clue. She won the 1994 MTV Movie Award for her role in this movie that was based on a book in which the author imagined her while writing the book.
Oh, is it Pelican Brief?
Gustavo, is that correct? Congratulations, Jill. That is correct.
Wow. Way to go,
Thank
Jill.
You. I love
All right, Jill. Our friends at the Megaplex have offered you a prize pack of the traditional date night movie of two tickets, two popcorn tubs, and two...
Nope. One popcorn.
No, sorry, one popcorn tub that you get to refill once, and two large
drinks.
Megaplex drinks.
Come on.
Or
wow.
they've got a prize, which is, he said I could give away all three as the option again.
Oh.
So we've got a mega tub deal where, I got to find it because I forgot to pull it up before we started this. But we've got a deal where you can get a mega tub tag, a coupon for a mega tub refill, two mega mugs, and it's like a whole bunch of stuff. Or you can have a flick with Saint Nick. For you and three other people can go catch a movie with Santa Claus with all kinds of cool Christmas decorations and things, plus a whole bunch of treats at the movie.
I think I'll
what
take
you
the
want?
First one.
She's going to go with the traditional date night. Excellent. Good choice. All right, stay on the line. Gustavo will get your information. Congratulations, Jill. Now, this is where I wanted to talk. Okay, so what we want is we want people to be part of our movie show club.
Okay.
Text the word movie to 57500 and you are part of the club.
Okay.
We're going to start giving away, if we don't get a winner on Telephone Torture, then we will pick a winner from our movie show club members to win that prize.
Gotcha.
So rather than texting in the win, we figure the best and most fair way is for everybody to have a shot at it. And I believe there's also some legal reasons, apparently, we have to comply with. So become a member of the movie show club by texting MOVIE to 57500. And what we're going to do to kick this whole thing off is... we're going to give away one of those other two prizes to a member of the movie show club. and you'll get notified. So that is Telephone Torture, sponsored by our friends at Larry H. Miller Megaplex Theaters.
The Movie Show.
My first save, I was this little sick kid. What did they call him?
It was Tiny Tim.
No. Sweet kid, one crutch.
No.
Little Larry.
No, Tiny Tim.
Micro Mike, Super Small Steve.
On KSL News Radio.
Super Small Steve was not the name of Tiny Tim. Although I heard Dickens was considering that as a possibility for the name of the character, and he finally decided to go with the alliteration of Tiny Tim, which I think was better in the long run.
I think my mom would have named me something else if it,
if it was Super Small
Tiny Steve.
It has to be an alliteration, Super Small Steve. Sorry. All right, Steve. Well, let's wrap up the movie show with Rapid Fire today, okay, where we recap all the stuff that we've talked about to give you our thoughts in case you missed it earlier in the show. And we remind you that the full-length movie show is available for download at kslpodcasts.com, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, kslnewsradio.com.
What?
And pretty much anywhere you want. Just type in KSL Movie Show, and you'll get a chance to listen so that you don't have to miss any part of it. All right, Steve, our big movie of the week was the Hayao Miyazaki animated Studio Ghibli film, The Boy and the Heron. I saw the Japanese version. You saw the English language dub. I felt like I would have enjoyed the English language version better.
I did enjoy it, although Spirited Away and some of the others that came out earlier in his career, I thought were better. But this one, the look of it is probably as good as you're going to find.
And your rating was?
B+.
And for me, it was a 2.5. I'll give it 3 for the benefit of the doubt, just because it was gorgeous, what I got to see when I wasn't reading words at the bottom. Also, we have Leave the World Behind on Netflix, Julia Roberts, Mahershala Ali, Ethan Hawke, and Kevin Bacon. Mm. Really good tense thriller. The less you know going in, honestly, the better. It is rated R, though, and it's got a little bit of stuff. Not as bad as some rated R movies, but keep that in mind. But I thought it was very tense, very tense. If you don't know what's happening.
Yeah, I liked it too. I gave it a B. I thought Mahershala Ali was amazing.
We have Eileen that's in a couple of theaters, starring Anne Hathaway and Thomasin McKenzie. Great acting performance by Thomasin McKenzie, but this is a left field movie, and you'll know within minutes if you're going to want to stick around to this. But
well, you may not.
I don't know if it's not a recommendation for me, although I did think Thomasin McKenzie was excellent.
Yeah, she was good. It's kind of a depressing film. I gave it a B-.
And there is a moment of whiplash late in the movie where you're like, huh, say what now? So that was Eileen. We've also got, Diary of a Wimpy Kid Christmas, Cabin Fever on Disney+.
Pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed this. I thought they did a really nice job with a great Christmas message, which normally we wouldn't get from Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
And that is on Disney+. We've got John Lennon, Murder Without a Trial, a 3-part documentary series on Apple TV+.
The best of which is the first episode. But you really do learn a lot about what happened and what a terrible tragedy.
I mean, it was an earth-shattering event at a time when the information doesn't travel the same way as it does now.
And the idea that he had zero security.
And he was like an advocate for peace, and to go out violently like that made it that much worse. Mr. Monk's Last Case on Peacock, the reunion of Tony Shalhoub and crew. It's basically a made-for-TV movie, and it's on Peacock. And if you like Monk, you'll like this.
Well, the idea that he made it through COVID was probably the funniest thing about that movie.
You do get to have the satisfaction of imagining Adrian Monk trying to live through COVID. We also have My Life with the Walter Boys, a Netflix series that I saw that you didn't. 10 episodes. It is teen drama to the max. Netflix seems to have carved out a little niche in the teen drama category. Content-wise, it was actually TV-14, pretty safe stuff. I didn't see all 10 episodes, but I just didn't like the late actress as much. But your teen and daughters won't give a care.
Yeah.
Then we've got The Oath, the movie somewhat locally produced, although apparently it was filmed in New York. But it tells the story of Moroni, the last of the Nephite nation, in a story from the Book of Mormon with Darren Scott, who's been in a lot of other LDS-related things, who wrote, directed, and acted in it. It turned out to be a solid thing, and I liked it. He had a lot of wiggle room to go with, where my initial thing of, well, I don't remember that happening, and then I realized, well, that's because nobody knows what happened.
Right. I think he did a nice job filling in without making it too weird. to be honest, except for Billy Zane.
And you'll see Billy Zane with the giantest beard you've ever seen on the guy who didn't believe that the Titanic could be sunk.
Yeah, exactly.
I gave it 3 out of 4 stars, and you gave it
I gave it a B-.
A B-. Then we have Maestro that is in local theaters, couple of theaters.
Yeah, it's got Bradley Cooper and Carey Mulligan. Carey Mulligan is going to win the Oscar. If it's not her, it's going to be Lily Gladstone from
Killers of the Flower Moon.
So it's just an extraordinary movie. I thought all the hype lives up to it. It's really
If you can't make it to the theaters, it is coming to Netflix in 2 weeks.
That's almost a tragedy, though.
But Steve says go and see it on the big screen if you can.
Atmos, if you can. That's the sound. Crazy.
And that is our rapid fire segment on the movie show. What a day, Steve.
Yeah.
For Gustavo back at the studio, Steve, great show today.
Thanks, Stone. Thank you.
Stone, thanks for everything here. And that is it for the movie show on KSL News Radio.